From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency. I'm Mike Hempen, a co-chair of the Broadcast Podcast Committee here at the National Press Club. Welcome to Update One. We have a very special guest, Matib Farid, a National Press Club member who last year, very late in the year, around Christmas time, published her memoir, Serving Without a Uniform, Reporting Truth in Defense of Freedom. Welcome to Update One.
Thank you, Mike, so much for having me.
You have lived a fascinating life. And we'll get into your book. It talks about growing up in Iran and moving to the U.S. and eventually becoming a journalist. When did you decide to write your book, and how long did it take to write?
I've been wanting to write my book ever since I came back from Afghanistan, but so much was happening in my head, and with all the political situation and everything that was going on in the world and the noise in my head. So it took me many years to actually come down to a place where I could focus. So that happened actually right after COVID, because we had to be locked down. And this is after I was married. So I was in Florida, and my husband created a beautiful garden for me, and he kept encouraging me to write my book. So that garden gave me the peace to be able to sit down and finally focus to write the book. The whole process almost took 3 years, but I was working full-time and had family obligations. And meanwhile, a year and a half into writing the book, I lost my father, which I love dearly. So that also put my project on a halt for about 7-8 months. So the whole process took 3 years.
And regarding your father, it was your father and grandfather who used to listen to VOA quite a bit when you
exactly.
were growing up.
Exactly. So I grew up in the Islamic Revolution and Iran-Iraq War. So I used to watch my father and my grandfather listening to Voice of America, and it was the voice of truth for them. It was the ultimate voice for them to find out what's really going on in the world, because they didn't trust the government's voice. So that's where I got the inspiration to eventually become a VOA reporter.
Growing up in Iran, I know you moved here as a teenager, but you talk about some of the struggles and how you viewed it as a place where there wasn't much of an opportunity there, if you can talk about that.
Sure. Shortly after the revolution, everything changed. I was so young, I didn't have a full understanding of what's going on. But we were told that, you know, the girls, after the age of 9, we had to cover our head fully to go to school. I loved Snoopy when I was growing up, so I used to wear Snoopy socks. I was banned from wearing Snoopy socks or wear any kind of hair accessory that showed through my scarf. And I loved my colorful backpacks. I couldn't carry my colorful backpacks. They had to be navy or some dark color. So I felt a suppression even at that age. And then we couldn't listen to the music, the pop music. We couldn't go to places. Everything was suppressed. So at that young age, I realized freedom is so precious.
You decide to move to the U.S. basically because you felt there was such an opportunity here. And you were around 15, is that right?
Yes.
I know that was a big move for you, a huge decision for you. What was it like coming to a country where you had to learn the culture and the language?
Very difficult, very challenging, but I was determined to do whatever I can. At that point, I knew I wanted to do more and be more than what the government was telling us we could be or do. Not an easy road, for sure, but I was determined to make it happen.
leaving your family at age 15 because you located to California and your family is still back in Iran. So that obviously was very tough on you.
It really was. You don't realize how much you need your parents at that age. But my parents didn't have a choice because I still had a younger brother. My older brother was in Germany. I got the visa to come to the U.S. and stay with my uncle in Sacramento. But they still had a younger child, and my dad still had a business, and they had families too. So they had to figure out a way and wrap things up back home in order to move fully. So the whole process for them took almost 4 years. So I didn't get to see them for 4 years.
You talk about at a young age deciding you wanted to become a journalist. And I believe you said it was listening to VOA.
Yes, I watched my grandpa and my dad listen to VOA at the same time, as I mentioned in my book, the Islamic Revolution happened, and they are very good in leading the information environment with propaganda. And then the Western news were showing Iranians as, you know, the people who have tendencies to terrorism and people who just, you know, women are in dark chadors. I wanted to grow up and tell our story and say we're not hostage takers, we're not terrorists, we're good people with a lot of culture and heritage, and we just want to live like everyone else.
Why do Americans have a misperception, if you will, about Iran?
I would blame, as someone who's been a reporter most of our life, I would blame, you know, the reporters and the news outlets, because sensationalism wins. And people talk about social media, but the sensationalism has been around for a long time. And a lot of these news outlets are operating based on ratings and based on, you know, the commercials they sell. So they have to make things a little bit unusual to get the business. And I think lack of good reporting. And even over the years, a lot of these reporters, ABC used to send a lot of reporters to Iran, or CNN for Christiane Amanpour. They used to be in safe places. They didn't really report fully. They would go do stands up, even in Afghanistan. If you remember, a lot of our reporters were staying in Marriott hotels in Pakistan, reporting what's happening in Afghanistan. Until I went actually to Afghanistan, I realized, oh my God, nobody ever really reported in Afghanistan. So I think I blame a lot of that on news outlets.
Let me ask you, you obviously are in Los Angeles, you graduate high school, and then you go to college and you're pursuing a journalism degree. You graduate from college, and I know that was a moment of tremendous pride for you.
It really was. I finished my high school in Northern California. Then by that time, when I graduated, my family was able to come to America. So it was a fantastic moment for me. But like ordinary students, I couldn't go to college right away because my father started his small business, and I needed to help my father. So I started taking courses at night and worked during the day and kind of make do with what I could and take internships and keep reading and educating myself. And, you know, at that young age, you're 18, you're trying to figure out, how do I take this route? I always knew I wanted to become a reporter, but being a reporter, you know, there's no easy solution, no formula. So I had to figure all that out.
And what was your road to VOA? Because I know you obviously grew up listening to it, and I know that had to feel very satisfying landing a job there. How did that wind up happening?
Actually, I was at House Radio TV Gallery. I was, every year they get one intern on the House, one on the Senate from the entire U.S. So I was honored to take that role that summer, and I was hanging out with one of the Fox reporters, Matt. He was teaching me a lot about journalism. After my internship, I went to him and I said, I need a job. And he gave me the number to call the bureau chief. At the time was Kim Hume. So I went and saw Kim Hume. She was very respectful. She said that she heard a lot of good things about me. And she said she doesn't have anything right away, but she had some late shift that I could take on Sundays to be part of the Sunday show, to work for Brit Hume's show. That was a, you know, tough shift. I had to be at work at 4 a.m. on weekends.
Very tough shift.
Yeah. And I said, sure, I'll take it. When 9/11 happened, I got a call from one of the VOA people who told me they received a tremendous amount of budget from President Bush for expansions of broadcast. And he asked me to come for an interview. That's how my whole journey started with VOA.
And how long were you with VOA?
Almost a decade.
Almost a decade, okay.
Between radio, TV, and Radio Fardo.
And I know you talk about breaking barriers covering the U.S.-Iran relationship. So if you can talk about some of the barriers that you wound up tearing down.
So working for VOA, it's a very, very meaningful job because the money is funded by the U.S. government, but you are broadcasting into countries like Iran, Afghanistan, you know, a lot of African countries who have no freedom of press. So watching my father and grandfather, how they relied on that information to make life-changing decisions, like moving, like doing business, like... So I knew how important my position, my response, it was a soldier, like I was the soldier to bring the truth. So I took my job very seriously, but what I didn't realize, because a lot of my training and my background was in private sector, when I came there, I realized there's a lot of bureaucracy, because at the end of the day, even though it's a news organization, but it's government owned, it's so bureaucratic. So when I learned to go with breaking stories, let's go do a breaking story, let's report on this, they were like, no, that's not how it works. It has to go through a process. I'm like, but this is news. We have to go fast. So that's how it was different.
Then after you spent time at VOA, you made a pivot in your career and became a diplomat serving in Afghanistan. And I know that was a completely different experience. What did you learn as a diplomat?
It was a very challenging job, but I've learned so much. Even though a lot of people don't take foreign service officers seriously, you become a local diplomat in that country, like a local ambassador. So you get to represent America in some of the harshest places where they don't necessarily have a very good understanding or positive understanding of America. So your job is now to educate them. I mean, it's like being a reporter, but in a different way. You are showing them a different side of what America stands for, not the side that they're learning from the news outlets. So being a reporter helped me be that conduit of telling that story.
Obviously, conditions were tough in Afghanistan in some of the areas you were at.
Yes, it was a wartime. So I was in eastern Afghanistan, which, you know, according to the military, it was one of the most kinetic area. So I traveled throughout eastern Afghanistan, and it was hard. We were basically conducting diplomacy while we were being shot at, or there were explosions.
So you were in danger during a lot of your time there.
Yes, and I mentioned that in my book. So every project that we did, it was with a military mission. So it wasn't like I was free to go and hold a class. I had to discuss my plans, for example, my poetry day plan with the military, and I had to get a military mission in order to go and conduct my poetry day.
How long were you in that role as a diplomat?
16 months.
Okay.
So at the time, during President Obama, they mentioned they wanted some civilian search. They wanted experts to go and serve for their expertise. And it was a different category of foreign service.
You returned to the U.S., and I found this a very interesting part of the book, but it makes all the sense in the world. You said it was a tough adjustment coming back to the U.S., and somebody out there might think, well, how can it be a tough adjustment coming from Afghanistan to the U.S.? A lot of people who haven't done that and been through the scenarios that you were might think that's an easy switch, but you said you found it very difficult.
It was, because when you go to war, you see so much, and you can undo what you see. You see a lot of bad, you know, it's war, a lot of collateral damage. And I saw a lot of military sacrifice. I mean, I've always had respect for our military, but serving with them just made me have more appreciation for their service. I mean, they serve in some of the most worst places on planet Earth, and they're away from their families. I was there for 16 months. Some of these guys were there on their fifth tour, fourth tour. So I just couldn't imagine all these people going through this harsh living because they signed up to serve.
You become a U.S. citizen. What was that moment like for you?
Beautiful. I mean, I can't imagine a more beautiful experience than that. And it was 3 months before 9/11. I found a new home. I was accepted to a new place. And I was so fortunate, right before I started my internship, my application gone through. So I was in Capitol Hill when I went back to LA to go through the ceremony and become a citizen. When I came back, the director of House Radio TV Gallery, Tina Tate, came and they flew a flag in the honor of me becoming a U.S. citizen. So it was a fantastic experience.
Was that the moment, becoming a citizen, when you felt that, hey, America is officially my home now?
Yes, yes. And you know, the letter from President Bush 43rd said, as U.S. citizens, now you need to start serving your community, serving your country. And that's where I drew my inspiration to go to Afghanistan.
And you're back in the U.S. Where do you locate then once you return?
I came back to D.C. after my journey in Afghanistan. But I was traveling quite a bit to L.A. to see my family.
And you did some teaching, is that correct?
Yes. After I did a Born Scholar program at Georgetown, it's a scholarship DOD gives you, then you have to pay back by working for government for a year. So I decided to teach at Defense Language Institute in Monterey.
And you became a DC-based political correspondent, is that right?
Yes. After that, I came back to my roots in Cali, and I've noticed Radio KIRN 670 AM was a small local radio station, but they had a lot of reach among the community, and it felt like a good fit after everything I've been through.
But you also started living in Florida too, is that right?
Yeah, actually, I moved to Florida 3 months before COVID. I mentioned that in my book. After Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was eliminated, I got a call from one of the buddies that I served with. He said, come to Tampa, we need you. So I went there, and 3 months later, COVID hit.
This is a fascinating read. What do you hope people get from this book?
Cherish your freedom and tell the truth, because truth matters, and especially for all the reporters around the world who would listen to us, you know, what we do matters. It's like fighting like a soldier. We fight for the truth. And I know it mattered. I saw it as a 9-year-old girl watching my dad, how he relied on VOA for finding a piece of truth in his life so he can make decisions, up till today where we see what's going on in the world and how the decisions are being made at the White House. So truth is everything.
How can people get the book? We mentioned it just came out at Christmas time. So
yes.
How can they order it?
They can go on Amazon. There's a Kindle copy and there's a hardcover copy. And I have a website. It's called servingwithoutauniform.com. You can click on there and it takes you right to Amazon.
Madam, thanks for being on Update One. We do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Madam Fareed has been the guest and NPC member, and she just wrote her memoir, Serving Without a Uniform, Reporting Truth in Defense of Freedom. I'm Mike Hempen. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.